It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We start a little early this time, and Alex is still not here, but he's coming, I promise, along with Jason Snell and Andy Iannocco. And, of course, everybody's very excited. Apple has announced an event for next week. What will Scary Fast mean? What can we expect to see? The hardware, the software, the speeds, and the chips, all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 892, recorded Tuesday, October 24th, 2023. Scary Fast. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Miro, the online workspace for innovation, where your team can dream, design, and build the future together from any location. Tap into a way to map processes, visualize content, run retrospectives, and keep all your documents and data in one place. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com/podcast. And by Brooklinen. It's no trick. Brooklinen's best-selling linens are sure to curb those seasonal skitties this fall. Visit in-store or online at brooklinen.com and use the code MACBREAK for $20 off your online purchase of $100 or more, plus free shipping. And by Mylio. Mylio Photos is a smart and powerful system that lets you easily organize, edit, and manage years of important documents, photos, and videos in an offline library hosted on any device. And it's free. See what has us so excited by visiting Mylio.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Oh, I love this week. I love this week. We are starting a little bit early, and Alex Lindsay has not yet woken up. He's going to eat his Wheaties, and as soon as he's here, we'll have him join us. But Andy Iannocco remembered we were going to start an hour early. Hi, Andy, from GBH in Boston.
Just in case I didn't go to bed last night, I've been up like just to make sure I didn't oversleep. It's an hour early. You know, my Tuesdays are playing to the micron, man.
And Jason Snell is here from SixColors.com. His heart is still pounding after getting the email this
morning.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. Well, I came back from a run. My heart was already pounding, and then I opened my email. By the way, Alex, the tribe has spoken. It's time for you to go.
The tribe has spoken.
His monitor is even gone from the set.
Yeah, we did. So. Oh, believe me, we don't waste any time.
Strike Alex.
He's off the island.
He's going to have to be nice.
He's over there. If at any point he shows up, we'll move him back.
And you are absolutely right to do that, Mr. Laporte.
Good thinking, Iannocco.
Jason and I are giving you our full support, Mr. Laporte. Absolutely, Mr. Laporte.
Yep.
So, Apple, I think this is unprecedented. It has announced an October 30th evening event, and it even has a spooky. Oh, it's not an event. Like, you're not
video.
Going.
Yeah,
you're not.
Well, there's no. It's just a video release.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, they sure got a lot of attention for that. So at 5 o'clock Pacific time on October 30th, Apple's going to release a video. There's the spooky. Pumpkin picture. I do hope Tim Cook shows up in costume.
It's a Mac OS face, though. We know what that means, right?
Yeah, that's the giveaway.
It's Mac. That's a Mac announcement here.
So also, Mark Gurman.
It's been a while since we've seen that logo in official Apple communications, haven't we? So maybe it really is like the ghost of trademarks past.
It's the Picasso.
What needs to be renewed?
Mac profile full on thing. I thought it was interesting that Mark Gurman, right before Twit, like in the morning on Sunday, in his Power and On newsletter, said, oh, and by the way, there's going to be an event. It's either the 30th or the 31st.
Yeah.
It was like, wow.
I heard from my retail sources, similarly, that there are a bunch of setups that they have to do when they bring new products into the store, and that retail stores were being told to stay late, basically, on certain nights and sort of the end of next week and the end of the following week. And I thought, oh, well, clearly something has happened. And there are all those reports in the supply from this retail chain, actually, that the that iMacs and MacBook Pros are not so much in stock right now. And these are all signs that there's going to be a turnover. But I'm surprised because that spooky speed, spooky fast, right? Like, implication here is that this is going to be the M3 and maybe even an M3 Pro. Who knows? Which I was sort of writing off the idea that we get the M3 this year. But it sounds like Maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah, it's weird because sometimes what you look at, what are they going to be releasing definitely in the first quarter of next year, or what's going to come up that has to happen in January. But sometimes it's like, okay, maybe they're not selling as many iPhone 15s as they thought they would. They need a burst of consumer sales so that this quarter's report looks pretty good. So who knows? It's like it's hard to imagine people getting particularly excited about an M3 Pro like in late October, but okay.
Yeah, I think this is not about the stock price, or is it? It seems like,
well, again,
you only get two days of sales, would you get any?
Well, it would be for holiday quarter, right? You're going to get November and December. Oh, you're going to get 2 months of it. It is, I don't know. I mean, I doubt Mac sales are going to appreciably offset anything the iPhone does, right? Just because of the scale of it. But I do think that Apple, if they have new Macs that they think might sell in the holiday quarter, either as presents or just because people want them and they want to do a rollout, I think Apple seems to be, they don't like to hold on to things that are ready to go. I think we talked last week about that weird Apple Pencil announcement and the fact that it didn't seem to make sense given the 10th generation iPad. And I've spent the last week thinking, why did they even release that 10th generation iPad when they had, the accessory wasn't ready yet? I think the answer is because it was ready. And I think that app, like they've got other fish to fry. They got other products to make. They don't seem to want to hold on to a done product for 6 months or 4 months or whatever it is. Plus, holiday quarter is the best quarter for them. People are buying stuff then. So if they've got a new iMac, if they've got new MacBook Pros, which is, those are very popular products, maybe now's the time.
Yeah. And I suppose you also catch people, you catch corporate environments that are like, okay, we've got $8,000 left in the budget that if we don't spend, we're going to lose. So you may as well just eat that up.
Right.
There's so many factors and it's hard to imagine, but it's just on my mind that CNBC and the other like financial outlets have been reporting about how like all the way across the board, Apple and every other manufacturer is in a huge slump, particularly for laptops. There's a whole bunch of stories associated with Tim Cook's visit to China last week about how, now they're starting to discount the iPhone 15 because they're not getting at least the initial buzz that they were hoping for. So, I mean, these are just things that are on the radar. And as usual, it's our job to guess and to speculate, especially when we've got 1 week before another event.
The last time Apple had an October event was 2 years ago in 2021. It was on October 18th, and they announced a MacBook Pro with M1 Pro or M1 Max, new AirPods, and the HomePod Mini. So
I'm also thinking about they did a either late October or early November event in 2019. So right before the pandemic. And because I remember flying out to New York for that. And, they have their Soho loft set thing that they do where they bring people in. And that was a big MacBook Pro update. So there are precedents for doing the MacBook Pro update in, this time frame. And so, they've done it before and it's not unexpected. And, it seems a little weird of like, what's under the tree? It's a pro laptop. But, in the end, I think Andy's right. The idea of spending money at the end of the year, whether it's under the tree or whether it's in your budget, is not a bad thing.
And the other thing that's kind of interesting here, and this is where I wish Alex were here to talk about, events in general, that they could have just dropped the video,
Yeah, but if they did that, would we be spending the next hour talking about it?
I think it's more about preparation, that they want people to clear this week in their editorial calendar because we're going to have new hardware to talk about.
Yeah.
But I'm always curious about what the new math is about saying, are we actually going to say, look, we're going to have a small event that's a live thing and we're going to have some demo areas. So if you need to get like your shots of the hardware, you don't necessarily have to be on that list of people who are going to get like one-on-one, like hotel suite demonstrations. It's weird. It's like I said, I had to look at it twice to make sure I understood that. No. They are just saying that there will be a new video available for streaming on this date. So if you're curious, book your plans to be at your desk this time and this date.
the truth is most of all Apple's events are pre-taped videos now, and they're all streamed at a time. Occasionally they have people come for WWDC and the iPhone event, but otherwise this is what Apple events are now. And I guess my answer would be, you don't want to undermine it, right? And have it be something that's a nothing. But if you have the power to get people hyped up a week in advance for a video drop, then, you know, why would you not? As a PR, a marketing agency, why would you not do that? So here they are.
It works for Taylor Swift. Maybe it will work for us.
It's the world we live in, right? It's a YouTube premiere.
Depressing to me is I didn't even get an invite to sit at my desk and watch the video. It's like they hate me so much, they didn't even bother to do that. So, okay, fine. I knew about it, though. I have friends who get the emails. I like Zach Hall at 9 to 5 Max headline. I'm going to just read it straight out. A scary fast event on Monday night? That has to be for M3 Max, not M2, right?
Right. I have a hard time imagining that they would say scary fast and have it be an M2 iMac, right? Which I was thinking yesterday, like maybe this is just a kind of an afterthought cleaning up kind of thing that they're planning. We didn't know if there was an event, but like, what are they going to do?
I thought Gurman said, oh, it's going to be M2s. It's not M2. Yeah.
But here's the thing. And yesterday I was formulating on the Upgrade podcast, like what would the MacBook announcement even be? And I thought maybe they just fix that low end MacBook Pro and make it more decent and like a mega MacBook Air and still have it be an M2 or maybe an M2 Pro. And that's all. But like the one thing hanging out there was, why are the MacBook Pros in short supply? Why is that? And I'll point out also, Apple has never, I realize it's only been two iterations, but in the Apple Silicon era, Apple has never launched the MX and the MX Pro simultaneously, right? That hasn't happened. And this sounds like that's going to happen, right? That this isn't just going to be M3, because if it's the MacBook Pro, surely it's also the M3 Pro and M3 Max. And that's really unusual in the not very long history of Apple Silicon for them to do that, because you got the sense that they started small and then expanded. And maybe not, maybe not.
Yeah, it is the phrase scary fast that make something that was okay. I bet it could be A, B, and C, and maybe we'll see D. But the fact that they're committing to the word scary fast, it's okay. Now I don't know, especially because there's been so much speculation about the release schedule for the M3 chip. A lot of people, I'm not just talking, you know, the commentators, but I'm talking about like analysts who are trying to direct investment guidance on what they think the release path is, essentially putting a lot of faith in the idea that this is not the time for them to release the M3s, particularly if they don't know if they're going to have a problem with supply or not. If they are releasing an M3 or an M3 Pro, that means that whatever problems that people were reporting about over the past 2 or 3 months either weren't as bad as those reporters and analysts thought they were, or Apple is now confident that they can at least sell as many as are going to be asked for.
I do wonder, one thing that excites me about the iMac as a possibility here is, first off, iMac only was ever M1, right? Hasn't been updated in a long time. If we're talking about M3, and if we're really talking about MacBook Pros, which means we're talking about M3, M3 Pro, M3 Max chips, it leaves us with the possibility that they will do something with the iMac that they never did after they did that initial M1 drop, which is make an iMac that you could opt to get as an M1 Pro like you do with the Mac Mini. Wouldn't that be great? Like, I think one of the real knocks on that iMac is that when it was released, it was the first M1. It was vanilla, but that's okay. Yeah. It was a good start, but they didn't offer any kind of upward expansion. And there were rumors, Mark Gurman talked about them, that they have talked about doing a bigger, more professional iMac, and it just kind of gets kicked down the road. They'll do it eventually, but they haven't made it a priority. But like, there are some people who all they really want is an iMac, but they need more than the base model chip can give them. And so I'm really excited about the possibility that there will be a higher profile option, a build to order option for an iMac that'll let you get that 24-inch iMac with a M3 Pro in it. That would be sweet.
Are you ruling out the larger screen?
Based on Mark Gurman's reports, it sounds like it's just not a thing that they're willing to do until, I think he said 25. Like, it's not even close. So it would be a real shocker if they did it. That would be great. That would be great news for a lot of people, as somebody who has an iMac Pro behind me, right? Like, I love the big Pro iMac.
One thing that's important to point out is that nobody kind of really predicted this event until a few days ago. This is kind of out of nowhere. And M3 yields at TSMC have been, we've heard, of course, nobody's talking on the record, but we've heard have been problematic. We also know that the iPhone 15 Pro Max does not have the top of the line M3 node. It's kind of a weird half breed kind of an M3, or it's obviously it's not an A, they call it A17, but it's, you know, we're all talking the same chips here. So I'm wondering, I think this is unexpected. So I think we maybe don't know at all what they're going to do, except that it's got to be a Mac and it's going to be scary fast.
Yeah. I can't imagine them putting a top chip in an iMac. I just can't figure that out. But then there's a question of, okay, so are you going to make turbocharged Mac Minis, or are you going to reserve these for the Mac Pro? And okay, M3 Pro Mac Pro makes a lot of sense. But again, if they're having limitations on how many of these chips they can put out, what is going to give them the most bang for the buck in terms of, like, how much money are we going to hand over just to get that silicon in that device? And would it necessarily be an iMac rather than something that is a little bit more associated with something zippy or something sporty or something available in Ferrari Red?
I don't know. I think it's the first step in that, right? And keep in mind, the M3 Pro is not the fast chip, right? And the M3 Max is not even the fast chip. It would be the M3 Ultra. The M3 Pro is already in the Mac Mini. You know, you get a little more, but it's not the whole thing. And then in the laptops, you can choose the Pro or you can choose the Max. So it would be akin to the Mac Mini move if they did it in the iMac. Obviously, the focus is going to be, if it's truly the MacBook Pro at the high end, going all the way up to the M3 Max chip, that's where your spooky fast, scary fast is going to be happening, and that's what people are going to be talking about. But I think I love the idea that Apple might let the Mac Mini and the iMac have a little more than the base model if you pay extra for it.
So this is, and maybe I'm getting this wrong. This is from PC Gamer. When the new iPhones came out, Apple's new iPhone chip has us worried about TSMC's 3-millimeter silicon and next gen GPUs because it's only about 10% faster and hardly any more transistors. Is it the N3 node though? And I think I'd seen in other places that it isn't maybe the ultimate N3 node, that it was an interim node. That's where I'm coming from on this. So, obviously, Apple's not going to say, and we have now the N3 node processor. They're gonna just talk about, you know, they're going to have those silly graphs. But I think we need to read between the lines and see what's out there. And I wonder what kind of yields they're getting and so forth.
Yeah. And just to clarify something that I was talking about earlier, that even I sometimes have to remind myself that just because it's the number is 3 as opposed to the number 2, that doesn't necessarily mean this is a revolutionary leap forward in power and processing.
Well, it is the N3B, which is what's in the iPhone, is not. And so
Jason pointed out, there's not 1, 2, 3. It's nothing Pro and Ultra. Those are the ones that you kind of get interested in.
Yeah. And the iPhone was not the beneficiary of that. And that led people to say, well, maybe the yields are low, which then led people to think maybe there won't be new M3 Max this year. But clearly, well, maybe not clearly. Apparently, they may have been wrong. So how about the screens? Are we going to see on the iMac, are we going to see OLED or mini LED? Yeah. Or what are we going to see, a better screen?
I think it's going to be that same 4.5K, 24-inch panel that they've got, which is a really nice panel. And since they don't seem to be, and the displays on the MacBook Pros are obviously just already spectacular. So I think, I can't imagine, these are both recently redesigned pieces of hardware. So it sounds like the story here is going to be the chips. And there is a school of thought that the M3 is going to be a bigger leap than the M2 was, because
M1,
M2 is a package, and then M3, regardless of what process TSMC is using, that it's their first sort of, like, you know, TikTok kind of approach, like that M2 pushed it forward a little bit, but that M3 is going to be a little more aggressive about that. But who knows? It could also just be a linear move from 1, 2, and 3 because the iPhone chips seem fairly linear, but they often have little extras in the works for those Pro and Max chips.
Yeah. Also, whenever Apple makes a leap to OLED on the MacBook, that's going to be like a big announcement. That's going to be where they go. They want to have people in. They're going to want to have people to see this thing in person. That's not going to be, hey, we're dropping a video. Good luck. Goodbye. See you next year.
So there's N3B, which is what's in the iPhone. There's N3E, and then there's going to be N3P as in Paul, which is an optical shrink of the N3E. So as underwhelming, perhaps, in terms of the speed bump, the N3B was, I'll be very interested to see what they do. Incidentally, we're going to get more clarification on this. One of the reasons we're starting early is that Qualcomm has a big event in about an hour and a half at which they're going to announce the Snapdragon X, which is in effect their response to Apple Silicon. Everybody, Intel, and now we hear NVIDIA, and of course Qualcomm are trying to get parity with Apple Silicon. It really leapfrogged the current processes. Yeah. So
particularly in wearables.
Yeah. So we'll be watching that at noon. We're going to try to get Ryan Shroud on. Ryan has now left Intel. Thank goodness. Ryan was, of course, a host of PC This Week in and Computer. What was it? This Week in Computer Hardware. Was it? I forgot what we called Twitch. Mm-hmm. And is an expert in chips and so forth. So he is actually at the Snapdragon event. We'll get his commentary. And I'm very curious what he knows about TSMC as well. Hey, good news. We were able to tear Alex away from office hours.
I'm afraid that I didn't get the schedule properly in my calendar. And so I got I got a couple texts that all came in and said, hey, they're going to start without you. I was like, what? And I was like,
How dare they?
I was in a meeting. I just said, I was in the middle of a meeting and I was I got to go.
Thank you. But that wasn't necessary. We were gonna pull you in as soon as you got here. And the reason we're starting an hour early is because of this Snapdragon event at noon, our time.
I think that one of the things that's going to be really hard for the other companies is that Apple has the advantage of the OS, the hardware, the chips. It's one thing to develop ARM chips. It's another thing to integrate them with all the other hardware and the OS and everything else. And that becomes, for other companies, it becomes a big negotiation. So there's a lot of everyone having to have lots of meetings and Apple just decides where it wants to go. I think that's going to be a real pacing problem that everyone's still going to have. I'm really glad that they're moving that direction. And I think it's good for everyone. But I think that that's going to continue to be the challenge that they have in that area.
Yeah. No, I think that what's interesting is Qualcomm and Microsoft seem to be in very tight collaboration, and Windows on ARM, which some of us are running on our Apple Silicon, runs quite well on Apple Silicon. So there's some thought about that. There's also this whole AI angle and having AI built into chips, and I suspect that's what the Snapdragon X is going to be. We'll see. We'll find out. Alex, are you excited? We've been talking about scary fast.
Whatever that turns out to be, I'm excited.
Yeah.
It's always a good opportunity. It'll be really interesting to see when they say scary fast. I think that Apple would probably, if they weren't taking a more aggressive stance, they would probably not say that in the promotion. So I have a feeling that we're going to see a pretty big speed bump, in that process. So it could be.
You don't say scary fast if it's just slightly faster.
If it's 20% more, if they say scary fast is 20% more, we're going to be like,
but it's like a pumpkin. They'll have it like under a sheet with ghost eyes in it, and then they'll pull it off and go, oh. It's a Mac.
Has Tim Cook mailed out enough that he might do it in costume, like in a Deadpool costume without the mask or something?
Man, we can only hope.
That would be pretty funny. That would be hysterical.
I wonder if they'll make, something about the night event. And because that's Jaws, right? Jaws is Apple's Batman. All the demos they do are in the daytime, and then they go to Jaws, and he's like in the dark somewhere, and he's like, whoa. So maybe it'll be Jaws. Jaws's lair, his bat cave.
He pulls off the mask and it's Ryan Reynolds all along. Oh my God. Yeah,
him and Johnny Strugi, who lives in the bat cave down below.
Johnny is actually in a cave, apparently.
I have very complicated like Apple Extended Universe thoughts about the continuity of all those events.
But we will be,
there,
of course.
Hanging on the handle was a titanium hook bonded with a exclusive aluminium process that has never been done before.
Even though I was not invited, we will be watching. I'm sorry, Apple. You can't stop me from watching.
Is anyone going?
There's no. Okay. So Jason says, and I think this is confirmed by everybody else, it's not an in-person event at all. It is just
nothing
a release
going on
of
in
a
Cupertino,
video.
Yeah. As far as
there's
I can tell.
There's no hands-on.
That's one of the big luxuries. As a person that works on events, when you see Monday events, you're like, oh, they're streaming it. Because it's...
Yeah, you know, nobody wants to Monday, work Monday. Yeah.
Well, it's the problem with Monday.
Night.
It's you're forcing people to fly on Sunday. And you're also, from a pure event perspective, you're paying union scale at double time on Sunday. And so that's most events don't happen on Sundays because you don't want to pay. There's a real premium to Monday. Mondays are a real premium because it means that people are on site on Sunday and you're paying a lot of money for that. So that's why you see a lot of stuff on Tuesday. So when you see Monday, that's the luxury that we never got when we were, for most, you almost never see a big promo on Mondays because of that, unless it's part of a larger conference that is already heavy.
Yeah. Come to think of it, that's also just 2 or 3 days before their earnings call on the 2nd. I don't know how much time they want to give like the team to meditate before they are live in an earnings call, but that's certainly a complication that they would love to be able to do without, I'm guessing.
Yeah, the live streaming a pre-recorded video, not very stressful compared to actually doing a live event. So it's definitely a big step forward. So it'll be interesting to see.
It's not just a live event. It's also like we've been seeing previous events in which it is really all pre-recorded, but Tim Cook and the rest of the team, they're there and they're schmoozing and they're mingling and they're giving people the 10 minutes they want on video and they're giving them the selfies they want. So I have no idea, but I think that's interesting. That's just a few days before the earnings call.
And doing that, doing that at the level that Apple does it at, is hard. and even in their own space, it's a lot of they pay a lot of attention to a lot of little details. So,
what do we think? So, we've been talking about an iMac, and of course, because Lisa just bought the 24-inch M1 iMac, I'm pretty sure that's what's going to come out. What else? The M3 version. What else do we think? 14 and 16, that seems to be based on possibly.
And maybe they'll fix that 13 and make it proper. I still am a believer that there will come a time where that 13-inch model that they're keeping down there to hold down the price list will get a little bit of a refurb and look more like a bulky MacBook Air a little bit rather than the touch bar design that, I mean, it's missing MagSafe. It shouldn't exist anymore. So will they take this opportunity to redesign it or will they not mention it at all? It'll stay in the price list until sometime next year when they'll do that. So it's possible they could do 13, 14, 16, but best guess is it'll be the iMac and the 14 and the 16 MacBook Pro, and it'll be a chip bump, and that the bulk of the event will be what that invitation suggests, which is let's talk about our chip prowess and let's unveil the M3, right? Like the M3 generation. It would not surprise me if that is the core focus of all of this, is just to talk about what the next generation of Mac chips is going to enable.
And I wonder whether at some point, if they start to align everything, like an iPhone, where there's lots of different iPhones and we release them all at one time. I wonder if we get to a point where we can say there are lots of Macs and we're going to release all the new Macs at one. Now, we used to do that.
Apple would like to have those things. Like maybe 3 events, an iPhone event, a Mac event, and an iPad event, and just update all 3. But do they want to get on a yearly cadence on everything? Maybe not. Look how long it's taken to update the iMac. They don't want to do that every year.
And before you got here, Alex, I made the comment that I think Apple likes to release products when they're done and not hang on to them for a long time. And the truth is, we think of Apple as this enormous company, and it is. But their product design and tooling and that whole thing, they can't drop all the new Macs at once. They just can't. They have to spread them out. They do 18 months and then they do, you know, different releases for different things. And I think to answer your question, would they like it if they could just pull the sheet back and say, next year's Macs are all here, right?
And I can see.
Yes, they would, but they can't. They just
can't. I can see them doing the iMac and with the Mac books and then have an iPad event and then at WWDC having the mini studio
Pro Max.
You know, or the only question I have is whether they want to spend more time on the Vision Pro next, you know, at WWC, and less time on pretty much talking about anything else.
Right. Also, let's keep in mind, the M3 Pro, if this is M3 Pro and M3 Max, those chips are used mostly in MacBook Pro, right? Like, Apple primarily sells laptops, and among desktops, I mean, they sell Mac Studios and I guess a few Mac Pros and some Mac Minis and some iMacs, right? But I bet you the iMac is the most popular desktop that's sold, and it's a fraction of the Mac sold because primarily it's laptops. It's like three quarters laptops. So if you're going to have a coming out party for the M3 Pro and Max and what they're about, you could do it as they've done it the last couple of times with the Studio, but the Studio will still be there to talk about the Ultra, but like Pro and Max, the most important thing to do is MacBook Pro. It's the right time to boast about that. And that, I think that's the vibe I'm getting here is get ready for Johnny Srouji and his chip guys to boast about all the amazing things they've dropped into the M3 and M3 Pro and M3 Max.
And here's how we run Resolve.
Yeah, exactly. On a laptop.
On a laptop. Yeah, exactly.
Unplugged. So,
yeah, exactly.
So thank goodness Mac Rumors has their buyer's guide, because it really helps me keep an eye on when release dates are. It's been 494 days since the 13-inch MacBook Pro was released. It was released at WWDC in 2022. On the other hand, the 14 and the 16s, it's only been 280 days. It's not even been a full year yet. And the shortest turnaround in recorded memory, at least according to Mac Rumors, was 176 days in 2019, although in 2016 it was 221 days. So it's not unprecedented to release a new one before the whole year is out.
I think that one of the things that'll be interesting, Apple has their own, or they have the FCP, the Final Cut Pro Summit, that's happening in the middle of November.
Interesting
to see, whether I think that the summit was probably not driving the hardware release. I think the hardware release, the summit's running a little later in the year than it normally does. Normally it runs in right about this time. And so the fact that it's a couple weeks later than normal, they might be looking at showing off what the performance opportunities are related to the Final Cut Pro.
And as you pointed out, the Vision Pro is coming soon. I think we're going to hear about it. They said early 2024, like maybe even January.
Yeah,
so
I think so.
January is when they released the 14s and 16s of this year is January. So maybe they are going to slide those back a little bit, make room for the Vision Pro.
The way this falls off cycle is that the M1 and M2 did start, like I said, with that base model chip, and then they brought the Pros along later.
Yeah.
And if this is what we think it is, that's not going to happen this time. And as a result, you end up with the MacBook Pro being basically less than a year instead of being on an 18-month cycle. And that's interesting. I wonder what motivated that. And if they were just getting their sea legs with Apple Silicon with M1 and M2, and this process is spitting out Pros and Maxes right now, so they might as well get it out there. I don't know, but I can't wait to see it.
You get into they've had this problem in the past where you get into this weird TikTok where the lower end machines are faster than the higher end machines.
Which is what would happen, right? The Pro is only an M2.
That gets frustrating. If that's why, like, if you release the low end stuff first with the M3s and then you come out 6 months later with it, you have potentially, and this is the first time this happened was really the G3 and the G4, which is that the G3, they put a larger L2 cache on and suddenly it was performing better than the G4. And so you had the high-end machines being outperformed by the low-end machines.
Yikes.
And so I think that that you could see this, and it's just frustrating. You're like, my laptop is faster than my Pro. And that's a hard pill to swallow when people pay a lot of money for the Pros. And so I don't know if that's a great user experience to do that, but it may be what it is.
Yeah.
That's computers, right? Yeah. I mean, they're always going out of date. It's just that's computer.
Well, and that's why you hold on to the Ultra, maybe, because the Ultra is what's in the Mac Pro. You do the
right.
You save
that won't be.
Yeah, you save it for.
Yeah, and they'll do I'm gonna bet that they're gonna do a Mac Studio and Mac Pro update next year, and it's just gonna be M3 Ultra, right? Like, and that'll be great,
right? But and how about the Mini? Do we think there'll be a Mini next Monday?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Mini. The rumors aren't for the Mini next Monday, but I'm sure they will do it.
Yeah.
And it'll be the same. Well, it's not because it's the iMac. I'm guessing the Mini will be about the same profile as the iMac, though, in terms of the chips. But
right.
it, you know, so maybe we'll see it, or maybe
much
we won't.
Pressure. Like, I have a lot of Mac Minis. I have a stack of them right here. And I don't think that much about, like, I'm not, if it was an M3, it wouldn't speed up my purchase cycle at all.
Right.
Like, it's not, they're really fast, and I'm doing a lot of
they're
great
things
with
them. They're fast enough is not, the key. Not scary fast, yeah, but fast enough. Well, yeah.
And the iMac is M1, right? The iMac is the one Mac that needs to be updated, yeah, it's just way, it is literally, it was the first wave M1s. So it's as old as Apple Silicon is old, and
it's
hasn't been updated since
907 days,
then.
According to Mac.
Yeah,
rumors,
so it's time for that one. And the Mini, you're right. The Mini will come, and those of us who used to buy Mac Minis, I mean, Alex knows this too, it used to be a very long time between Mac Mini updates.
Years.
So we can wait a little bit. It's fine. And the MacBook Air, Mark Gurman had a report that he thinks that that's sort of like a spring or maybe even summer, and then they'll do an M3 of the Air in both sizes and get that back on schedule, and that'll be very popular too. But
all right, I want to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk specs. I want to get your speculation on the specs. not those specs, the other specs. I want to find out what we're going to be looking at with this new potentially M3 chip. Won't it be sad? Won't it be disappointing if it's just a M2 Ultra and stuff? That's not. It's going to be an M3. Hold that thought. Our show today brought to you by Miro. What is Miro? Well, it's whatever you want it to be. It's the online workspace for innovation. What does that mean exactly? How can it help you? Well, depends what you're doing. Miro is one incredible visual place that brings all of your innovative work together, no matter where you're located. That's great with hybrid teams and teams of different time zones now. And if you're doing product design, this is just one of the many things it can do, but it is packed with the right things to be your dream product's home base. We're talking 6 whole capability bundles, from product development workflows to content visualization, and it's powered by Miro AI. That means you're generating new ideas or summarizing complex information pretty much instantly using AI. Miro can work for any team, but product development teams really get the full experience. It offers teams the richest feature set of any visual workspace, with specific tools to help with strategy or process mapping, or facilitation tools to run effective design or agile sprints. You get the picture. Miro connects super seamlessly to the platforms you're already using, including Jira and Confluence, Google, Asana. So you can centralize your work in a way that makes sense for your team. You don't actually have to leave Miro to use those tools. You can update projects or statuses in any of those tools all through Miro. We use it with Zapier, Google Drive, Google Sheets for show production. It also ends up being a massive time saver. Miro users report saving up to 80 hours a year because they streamline conversations, they cut down on meetings, they see all the most up-to-date information in one place. Now, there's a new feature in Miro that's very handy, especially for teams in different time zones. It's a board video recording feature. They call it Talk Track, to save even more time. You can let's say you're working in a different time zone from your team. They're not online right now, but you can pre-record your thoughts, leave it on the board, instead of scheduling yet another meeting that everybody has to work their schedule around. This is a great feature. Just one of many features. Lots of ways to comment on what's going on. TalkTrack is new, though. That's the video recording feature. Go on, try it out for yourself. The best part is you can get your first 3 boards for free and start working with all the features. And for free. For free. Did I say it was for free? Free. Start working better. Miro.com/podcast. I mean, it is clearly the leader in this space. Miro, MIRO.com/podcast. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. All right, now I'll tell you what Gurman says. He says the next generation, at the top end, the next generation MacBook Pro will include 40 graphics cores, 16 main processing cores. He does also say don't expect a MacBook Air this time. That'll be next year. They did just update the Airs. I know, because I just bought one. It makes me mad, because what I really want is a M3 Pro 14-inch MacBook Pro. What does that mean to you, Alex? 40 graphics cores. Is that I mean, this is part of the problem they have with these chips. They can't, they don't support NVIDIA or AMD. They don't support discrete graphics cards.
I don't know if they need to. I mean, you know, I think that there's definitely things that you can only do if you have those graphics cards because they're written to the cards. But there are a lot of advantages of having a lot of RAM sloshing around that can be shared by the graphics cores as well as the CPU cores. And so I think that that's a, so having a lot of graphics cores, you know, obviously is going to speed up not just your 3D graphics, but also speeding up things like Resolve, Final Cut, other, you know, graphics applications. Also the kind of thing that you can throw into even just the very basic. I mean, at some point you start taking advantage of run-of-the-mill systems. But I think that when it comes to games, when it comes to 3D software, when it comes to doing a lot of the even just heavy 2D software, the graphics cores start to come into play. And as you look at even just developing for AR, there's a lot of calculations that are done. So when you think about photogrammetry, those graphics cores come into play. And having a lot of RAM available for the photogrammetry is really important. And so having all of that RAM available and then having lots of cores means we're able to generate 3D models from photographs. And
we should explain that this is because of Apple's unified memory architecture, that the RAM that is available to your processor is also available to your graphics and can be used in its entirety. So when you see graphics, discrete graphics cards, and they say, you know, 32 gigs of RAM, that's all they can use, whatever the RAM is on the card. But in the case of the Macintosh, they can use the entire system memory.
And what's interesting about that is that there are certain operations that you can do in parallel. So you can do all these operations, and that's what a graphics card's really good at, is doing a whole bunch of things all at the same time, which greatly speeds things up. Whereas there are some things that have to be done in a more managed way, which is what a CPU is really good at. And when you have both of them sharing the same RAM, it also means that they can shift back and forth very, very fast. You know, and so I can do this part where I can, and then I can take advantage of the other side of it. And so it's very, very efficient. And I think that and the software is really not catched up, hasn't caught up for the most part. There are a handful of companies like Zoom of all companies that have really taken, like they work with, they're squeezing every little bit out of that chip, and we see it being able to put eight 1080p streams out of one little Mac Mini is squeezing all the quality that exists in that chip out the door, but not many companies are taking full advantage of that yet. And as we start to see companies writing to the APIs that Apple's giving them, they're going to see more and more of those advantages to those chips. But we're just seeing the very beginning of that right now.
The current, if I spec out the top of the line MacBook Pro, is a 12 core CPU, a 38 core GPU. By the way, Mark did not mention the neural engine, but this is one area where Apple really has a lead on others. Now that AI is so hot, the 16 core neural engine, which is its AI chip. AI
well, and the other thing that it'll be interesting to see is if any of these start to, you're starting to see AV1 decoders and seeing if these computers start getting a lot of AV1 encoders. Because that also means that if you have discrete chips capable of the AV1, encoding and decoding, it will greatly affect, again, things like video conferencing, but also what you can stream and how you put those together. So being able to encode it back into AV1 will also be an interesting. We're seeing some of these discrete chips. Of course, ProRes is already there for a lot of the Pro pieces of hardware. So these dedicated chips like the Neural Engine are pretty interesting.
Also, I note if I order this 14-inch MacBook Pro with a high-end BTO specs, it won't be available till November 16th.
So. Well, this is the thing, is the availability is vanishing for a real good reason, right? Like that's
the
part
giveaway,
of what's going
isn't
on
it?
Here.
Yeah.
So I did when the iPhone Pro came out, I looked at the new chips, right? Because this is the first time that we've seen them from this chip generation. And the truth is, with Apple Silicon, a core is a core is a core. If you look at the like A16 and the M2 at the CPU core, the CPU core will get the same score in a benchmark, and the GPU core will get the same score. These things are not a totally different core for the Mac than from the iPhone and the iPad. It's just not true. They haven't done that. I don't think they will ever do that because it doesn't. Why would you build two different cores? Everything Apple does with new chips is scale. So yeah, it's more GPU cores and even more of them on the high end. And you also in that are in that situation where there's binning so that the pro will have fewer and then and the max will have more. But really, they're all just trying to make the max and some of them get, marked down to be a cheaper, slightly less functional pro chip. And then the Ultra is just two maxes attached to each other. So you could see that Apple's trying to, it's very Apple, right? It's like they're only one company. They do a lot. So they try to reuse wherever they can. The other mystery, and this is the stuff that will make Alex lean forward if they announce it, is they throw stuff in. So like they threw a bunch of video encoder and decoder stuff into the M1 Pro, and then it was in the M2 and the M2 Pro. And that's the other thing to hold back, is in addition to just like how many cores, how many GPU cores, how many CPU cores, how many neural engines, all of that kind of stuff will be, do they have a little extra something? Well,
and like, for instance, if you encode to ProRes on one of these machines that has the ProRes chip, it is lightning fast.
Yes. You know, even the M2, like in a MacBook Air, has that. Yeah. That was a pro feature in M1 that became just part of M2. So that's something to look for, is like, those are the wild cards, right? We know, you could probably, based on Mark Gurman's reports, you could probably guess within a very small percentage of what the benchmark scores will be for these computers, right? But we won't know some of the details, like, will the M3 support multiple external displays? That's been a problem with M1 and M2, where people who use two external displays have been unhappy. Will it be the case? Or will they continue to withhold that feature and put it at the higher end? Or are there some very special pro-focused encoder, decoder, other things going on that chip, or AI focused, that we don't know about, that they're going to roll in on silicon? Because again, if you put it on silicon, it is way faster than having to run it in software on the CPU or the GPU.
Well, and again, notwithstanding the Ultra, which is those, you know, basically doubling up for the other ones, they're going to put a lot of that into the same chips, because what differentiates the machines is not really the chip. That what differentiates the machines are the subsystems that support that chip. It's how many lanes of Thunderbolt do you have? How many, those types of things are things that, how many Thunderbolt ports do you have at all, and heat dissipation and fans and so on and so forth. So these are all, so those things are, but the chips themselves are, they want to keep them as similar as possible, as Jason said, because it makes it simple.
Recycle. Apple is real good at recycling, but they also they also are real good at scaling. And, what's the difference between a Mac chip and an iPhone chip really is more, right? More CPU cores, more GPU cores, more support for memory, stuff like that, that just sort of scales. But something to watch for is if they make claims about like, oh, and we've also thrown in this thing. And you're like, oh, that features. Does, because some of those pro features, that's where they go, is they do dedicated pro hardware on those high-end chips, because it lets them be so much faster than they would be if they didn't do it.
Just the fan in the studio, makes a big difference. And and the other thing, I think it's so clean, because like they'll just tell you flat out, the studio and the pro are the same computer, except one has a whole bunch more lanes and it's got places for cards and it's gotten to cost this much more, but otherwise they're the same machine.
There's a kind of elegance to that. Pro. Yeah. I really that. So let me understand, you say they're binning it. In effect, TSMC, the Taiwan Silicon Manufacturing Company, which makes these chips, makes a wafer with all the same chips on it, right? This is just the 3-nanometer M3 chip. Then they test them, and depending on, because unfortunately, it's not a perfect manufacturing process. There will be some dead chips on there, but there'll also be some chips where not all the cores are functional or reliable at temperature, or not all the GPUs are there or reliable at temperature. And they'll bin those. They'll say, okay, now we have an M3, now we have an M3 Pro, now we have an M3 Max, maybe even now we have an M3 Ultra, right? They're not different wafers for each model, or are they?
The M3 is different. It's the Pro and the Max that are basically binned.
So there's an M3 nothing wafer,
right?
And then there's a high-end M3, and then they will bin those based on Pro, Max, and Ultra.
Right. Got and it. Ultra, I think, is also from that same wafer, but they have those interconnects that they build in. And so if they get two really good Maxes
together, they get cut
out and turn into an Ultra. So there's really the low end and the high end chips, and that's how they do it.
Got
and then
it.
Within there, they can do some binning. But like, the Pro and the Max should be basically the same.
And so, the ones that really don't work, they just put them in the Apple TV and call it a day.
Actually, remember, that was part of the sweetheart deal that TSMC did for Apple. Normally, the manufacturer does not eat the cost of the non-functional chips. But in this case, TSMC said, yeah, if they don't work, we won't charge you for them. So I don't know what they're going into the bit bucket. Keith 512 in our IRC says the M2 Pro GPU 19 core is 6.8 teraflops. And is it the case that you double that, you go to 40 core, you can double that speed? Is it going to be closer?
You take a penalty, right? It's always every time you increase it, it's not a 2X.
It's not 100% efficiency. Okay. But you could be talking 14 teraflops here. Something. 13 teraflops.
Yeah, which again, I mean, Apple isn't winning the max GPU output war in computers, right? It's not. What it is winning is the output power ratio thing, right? And for a laptop, that's really important because you can buy, like, you will probably be able to buy a PC laptop that has way better graphics performance than these new MacBook Pros. But, you know, huge asterisk, right? Because it'll be only on power with very loud fans blowing. And if you unplug it, it has to power down and all those things. And these Apple Silicon Macs, they just run. And it doesn't matter whether they're plugged in or not. And they might blow fans, but not particularly hard. And, you know, that's good for a laptop. So that's because Apple's whole legacy at this point is chip design for mobile devices. And so the more they can scale it, the better. It's great. But let's also just remember that it's not necessarily that they're the best at graphics. It's just they're the best at performance per watt, basically.
So Ming-Chi Kuo, of course, had to weigh in. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's going to be an event. He says he's expecting multiple M3 chips rather than just a single one, hinting at the possibility of an M3, M3 Pro, and M3 Max. I think we already thought that, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I don't. You know, this sounds like him just saying, I knew that, as opposed to my sources are telling me, but I can't read Chinese. So.
Well, even Pro versus Max, if they remain a binned chip, I mean, they're not two different chips, right? The difference is that Apple has decided they're simplifying the branding, right? Because on the Intel side, and back when there were Intel Macs, it was always like, do you want the 8-core or the 10-core or the 12-core or the 14-core? And Apple has tried to simplify that to a certain degree, where they're sort of like, here's the collection you get in Pro and here's the collection you get in Max. And there are core variations, but they've tried to keep it simpler if they can.
Yeah. By the way, Kuo was the guy who said, they're not going to do MacBook Pros in 2023.
Yeah.
So he's playing catch up at this point.
He's a supply chain. So here's the funny thing about somebody like Ming-Chi Kuo, who has very good supply chain sources. But the problem is his information is limited. And then he has to fill in the blanks with narrative or guesses or whatever. So, like, if these new MacBook Pros are identical to the old MacBook Pros and that all that's different about them is the chip that's inside of them, he and his sources probably can't tell, right? They can't tell that there's a new MacBook Pro because it looks just like the old MacBook Pro.
Right.
And if the new iMac looks more or less exactly like the old iMac going through the supply chain, they won't know. They won't know the difference. So that's something to keep in mind with the people who have supply chain sources, is that sometimes they get fooled because unless there's a physical difference or a major, like a part difference where they have to buy a whole new part to put it in this computer.
Right.
If you don't see that, they don't see anything.
That's the limitation of a supply chain source. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark's sources both include supply chain, but also Cupertino, which is a lot harder to get information out of. And probably given what you said about the retail sources, some retail sources as well. That's actually a good place to look. That's clever. So
yeah, I mean, retail obviously is they know what they're doing. Retail employees are gonna, you know, but you don't know the details, right? Again, you're just like, oh, I think something's gonna happen. The problem is they could be stringing Christmas lights, right? Like, really, they could be putting up turkeys.
Yeah, come in and let's put some pumpkins in the window.
Which is why sometimes it's the shortages that are the real tell, not like, are they doing something in the stores? It's like, are they running out of iMacs because they're not making that iMac anymore? There you go. That's a tell.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And we don't know. Will there be other things? at this thing on Monday night? Will there be other? Will there be Apple? I would like to see pumpkin shaped home minis, but maybe not. I don't.
I do think it's interesting that they're doing it at 5 o'clock in the You know, in the.
Why do you think that is, Alex?
It's after. It's well. I think it's safely after trading.
Yeah.
And that's usually the reason you put something at the end of the day. But.
But why would they care? Is it going to hurt Apple's stock price?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know. It's a very it gets it out of the news cycle. Like it for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's odd, isn't it?
It's an odd thing. It feels like they just want to get it out, but there's other things they want to talk about.
I'm thrilled because I can sleep in on Monday and I can.
It's very odd because you can put it anywhere you want because you're not. It just seems like it's the oddest time. I don't think they've ever done a 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time release ever. So maybe they're just experimenting, see what happens. Give the evening crowd a chance to watch it live.
Maybe it's more for China. Because remember,
it is an Asian market release. That would be in the morning, comfortable morning.
It'd be in the morning for China. Or India. What is the time zone difference for India? Maybe not for India. It's too early for India.
A little early for India, yeah. I think. But it would be.
Just right for Asia.
Yeah, I think I think India with daylight savings, I can never remember, but it's like, I think it's 12 and a half hours off or something. And
Samsung does night events because of, it's in Korea because of the time.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know if it's trading. I mean, you could do it at 4 p.m.
It seems to make actually more sense when you think about it.
Making
that available.
Well, it's 8 a.m. and it'll be.
Right. Oh, yeah. Andy, you just froze. What is it? 8 a.m. in China?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really interesting stuff. Well, I'm glad. I'm excited. We will cover it. I'm inviting all of you, if you would like to join us, 5 p.m. on Monday. I'll bring tacos.
Sounds good. I'm there.
It's Taco Monday.
Taco Monday. I think that hasn't been copywritten, so we can say Taco Monday. We won't get sued.
Yeah. The guy who owns Taco Tuesday, by the way, has given up and said, you can have it. It's fine. The world can have it. Literally, there's some little taco shop somewhere in the Midwest that owns it. And taco.
Just like Jonas Salk saying, hey, this belongs to the benefit of the world.
It's very much like that, giving the polio vaccine to the world. Yeah, very much like that. Here,
I do wonder if they're going to use any of this time during the event to talk about like Killers of the Flower Moon or F1 or Napoleon or all the
other. They've got all these great stuff coming.
They got a lot of movies coming up.
Yeah.
They're going into theaters. Like they're not just a nominal release in a few theaters to get it qualified for the Oscars. It's like, no, they're doing 3,000 theaters through Paramount. So I don't know. It's certainly a place for them to like to sort of flex. Hey, here's exactly how much we're stretching our tentacles these days. And please buy some popcorn because we got a lot of money sunk into this four hour long.
Well, I think that one of the things that Apple is proving is that their model might have been the best one, which is that, hey, we're not going to make 1,000 pieces of content every year. We might just make a fraction of that, but we're going to do them really well. I have to say that I keep on watching, you know, when I watch Apple shows and Apple movies, I'm just caught up with, I get a little distracted by the production quality. Like it's so high.
It's too good.
it is so high all the time. And it's just like, cause there's shots and it's just the way you just see how they're constructed and what it would take to do that. As someone who does this, you look at it and you're just like, wow, they spent a lot of money on that shot. And I can't stop thinking about how much money they're putting into these individual shows. They're just so well done. I can totally see
at the very end saying, and oh, by the way, here's a trailer for Killer of the Flower Moon, or maybe it'd be really, I'd be really thrilled if this said, oh, and by the way, starting in 2026, we own F1. I would love to see that too. This broke today. Taco Bell's battle to free Taco Tuesday trademark is officially over. That guy right there, Gregory, owner of Gregory's, what else is he going to call it? Restaurant and bar in New Jersey was the other guy. There were two people in July, a regional chain, Taco John's, abandoned its trademark registration. But Gregory was not given in. I don't know. I don't understand. He said Taco Bell makes us look bad. For Gregory's Restaurant and Bar, Taco Tuesday brought a lot of pride over the past 40 years, says Gregory. Relinquishing the trademark registration doesn't change that, but it does allow others in New Jersey the same opportunity to build their own traditions and spread Taco Thursday throughout the state. So it's over. It's over. Our national nightmare is over. Taco Tuesday has now been freed for all of us to use. We're going to take
the Speaker of the House, but we can't agree.
we can't get a Speaker of the House, but we can definitely solve the Taco Tuesday crisis.
And Taco Fridays in Sweden are still okay.
Is it Friday in Sweden?
Taco Friday. Yeah, you go. I went to Sweden and they're like, oh, we love tacos. I'm like, what? How? What? And apparently that's a thing that in Sweden on Friday, it's a cozy taco home Friday. Taco Friday in Sweden.
But is it a real taco if it has pineapple, peanuts, and cucumbers on it?
I'm not going to shame anybody for putting whatever they want in their taco.
There's no pineapple.
I put pineapple on pizza. You can put it in a taco.
We've just pineapple come together, and already you're trying to break us apart in fractions.
I stand with Sweden.
What people say about the media is absolutely right. I'm disillusioned.
Let's take a little break. Great to have an early version of Mac Break Weekly. If you're just joining us, you missed the first hour, but you can go back, because it's a podcast, and watch our discussion of the Apple event coming Monday, 5 p.m. Pacific. We will 8 p.m. Eastern. We will be, of course, streaming. what do I call it? We'll stream a version
commentary
of us watching the video together with you.
Commentary track.
Live reaction video. It's hot now. It's hot.
Oh, yeah. This is maybe I should bring in some five-year-olds and have five-year-olds react to Apple's. Hey, Alex, are you going to do the office hours, 5 p.m. office hours, watching the event?
I'd like to hang out with you on this one.
Come for this one. But you know what? If you want to bring office hours people with you, please. We could do a joint simulcast.
We'll figure out how to get a crossover episode. I'll hang out with all of you here for the show, and then I'll go talk to folks at After Off. But we'll get them to all watch the show here.
Now, here's the most important question. Should we wear costumes? It is the day before Halloween.
You know, I don't wear costumes anymore.
I have so many costumes. I'll leave that to you. You can come as you are or not. Our show today brought to you by, I love my sheets. You know, I've been traveling. And I have to say, so the plane landed Saturday night, late at night. I'm ready to go home. I've just missed my bed, missed my lovely wife. But boy, when I got in those sheets, my lovely wife had to take the back position because I was on my Brooklinens again. Maybe I should get mom some Brooklinens. With nighttime starting earlier, the spooks are coming out. Let Brooklinen help with those seasonal scaries. Curb those fears with a cozy Brooklinen setup to settle into each night. We have it all, the Brooklinen sheets, pillowcases, towels, duvets, the whole thing. And I got to say, it's the best linens I've ever had. You don't want any monsters hiding under your bed. But at the top of your bed deserves the best. Since 2014, Brooklinen has offered premium, beautifully made linens that are tried and tested. So you don't have to worry about what's on your bed. You can worry about what's under your bed another time. Sweaty bad dreams after watching that Halloween movie. Luckily, Brooklinen offers a whole fleet of sheet options. From linen to flannel, something so cozy about those flannel sheets this winter. To accommodate whatever you need, cool, hot, and everything in between. They also keep your seasons fresh by offering limited edition colors. Drop these regularly, so you can always have a new look if you want. Brooklinen keeps you well-rested and fresh. And then you could take the old sheets for your ghost costume. Cut a couple of holes in it and you're set. Except I cannot bring myself to do it. I love my Brooklinen so much I couldn't do that. Upgrade to Brooklinen seasonal picks for linens as well as top of bed, bath, and more. We did get, I was really pleased. Lisa's favorite color is red. We got bright red towels and I love them. I love them. I'm not alone. With more than 100,000 five-star reviews, Brooklinen's internet famous sheets have won multiple awards from industry experts. They're made with long staple cotton that gives them both softness and longevity. They wear beautifully. It's no trick. Brooklinen's best-selling linens are sure to curb those seasonal scaries this fall. Visit in-store or online at brooklinen.com. B-R-O-O-K-L-I-N-E-N. Get it? It's like they started in Brooklyn, but it's Brooklinen, B-R-O-O-K-L-I-N-E-N.com. The code MACBREAK will get you $20 off your first order of $100 or more, plus you get free shipping. That's a pretty good deal. B-R-O-O-K-L-I-N-E-N. Brooklinen.com. Promo code MACBREAK. For $20 off plus free shipping. It's the internet's favorite sheets. My favorite sheets. Forget the internet. It's my favorite sheets. Brooklinen. Thank you, Brooklinen. Hey, we were kind of talking about GPUs, Alex. And is metal Apple's solution for writing directly to the GPU? Is it
yep.
as good as DirectX or whatever the other options are?
It's different.
It's just different.
You know, it's definitely the way to do it on a Mac. Like if you're doing
it's
on
all
a Mac,
you got.
You need write metal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you need to, the one thing that talking to folks who are doing a lot of the development, the one thing that they'll tell you, if the folks that are getting the most out of the hardware, they're working with Apple as a developer with their developer input, and they're doing it exactly the way that Apple tells them to do it. Like they're not getting creative. When they get creative and try to write their own, they're not getting anywhere near the same performance. So allowing it to abstract that process and use this, what it allows it to do is scale up and down with the hardware, because now Apple has this little piece in between that allows it to become much more efficient. And so when people are really working with Apple to do that, when they think they have it figured out and they do it on their own, they're not getting the same efficiencies. When they're working with Apple to really squeeze that out and writing to metal, they are getting a lot of performance, and they feel like they just keep on opening up new boxes of performance inside of these M series chips. But it does take really allowing Apple to do the parts that are going to, you know, that Apple's taking over, you know, for that part, because the chip is very complicated. You have to go back and forth between the CPU and the GPU. There's a lot of other subsystems, and you want the OS to smartly hand you back what that looks like. But there's a certain level of trust that people have to have. And, you know, a lot of companies did not do that in the past.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, that's part of the challenge.
Apple, for some reason, seems to have decided they want gaming on the Mac. I mean, they own gaming on mobile.
A Mac Mini would be a really good game machine.
Yeah.
You know, so there's, I mean, if you look at the, you know, you look at those things, it could be, it's hard. I think Apple has to figure, I mean, everybody always needs a product to get them out that door. And Apple, I don't think, has found that product yet.
I also think it's tough. PC gamers are a hardcore bunch, and, you know.
I don't think you have to go after PC gamers specifically. I mean,
Blizzard just released, in order to get people to donate blood, they said if 666 pints of blood are donated, we're going to give away a case that's made of blood. I mean, this is a crazy bunch, these PC gamers.
That seems wasteful.
That seems like a bad idea. I think that, probably just a little bit of blood, maybe just a little tiny bit of blood in it. It's a blood red case.
Well, I think that there's always, you know, there's always a couple groups, and the group that's hardcore PC gamer, I don't think that that's really a viable market for Apple. Like, I don't think that's...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is you can't say we're now the new gaming desktop PC.
Well, but there's a lot of people who haven't really gone into that market. I mean, it's still a pretty... It's big, and yeah, you can fill a stadium once at a time. You know, you can't like do it like football, like you do it in a whole bunch of stadiums every weekend. So there's still an awful lot of growth that's available in gaming. It's just that the gamers, you know, the gamers have a, you know, that it's a significant market, but it's not by any means over half the country or something, you know, like it's that are building these PCs. And so there's still an open market there. It's just a matter of deciding, you know, what you're going to open that up to. I think that the game that gets Apple out the door is not going to be a game that a traditional PC gamer is going to go, oh, that's the answer to everything I always wanted. That's the best, you know, whatever. I think it's going to be a typically Appleized, simplified game.
Yeah.
But something that takes full advantage of the graphic systems and so on and so forth. And I think that the advantage that Apple has is the ability to build a game that could seamlessly scale from the phone to the pro.
So you're saying you're not going to try to lure existing AAA titles or AAA developers to port their stuff to the Mac. You're saying something written specifically for the Mac, and that might be an interesting idea.
I think that that's the, I mean, because Apple has arcade and they do buy games.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like it's out of the question to build it. It's just a matter of figuring out what that game is And fundamentally, I mean, I think that the weak point for most games is that they're actually, the gamers love them, but they're not approachable in a lot of ways, you know, by an average person.
You're not bringing in new people.
They're complex. That's right.
In fact, as these games appeal more and more to serious gamers, they appeal less and less to normal people because they become complicated and difficult.
I've played a lot of games, and like I played Marathon a lot, like when I was
Marathon, and you old man.
I played a lot of so much Marathon, the thing is that I don't care about any of the story. Like we just played the arena, you know.
We played a lot of Marathon Arena on the Tech TV set as well.
So like playing arena is, and you could build something that was just an arena, and it could be just one arena, and you build it into a bigger game. What makes a lot of sports, whether it's European football or American football or baseball or basketball or hockey, it's something that you can kind of get your arms around and see what's going on all the time. And that's not what you get out of games. And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity to build different kinds of games. And, you know, then you throw a big, like, prize on it. You'll pull a lot of PC gamers if they feel like they can make $1 million, like taking a hit, playing hard.
Apple, we were talking about the neural processor. One place Apple has an advantage is all of their hardware now has AI processing built into it, unlike PCs some Android devices, the Google Pixel, because it's got their own chip and it has a NPU equivalent in there. But that might be interesting for Apple to do something with AI. I don't know how long this advantage will last. It's one of the reasons we're going to watch the Snapdragon event in about an hour, because it's coming to PCs.
The big advantage of the games is, again, that I think Apple could take advantage of and they're not taking advantage of now, is something that you could release a product across everything from Apple TV and the phone all the way
that's
to
a
the
good
Pro
point.
And allow it to just keep scaling. So, like, for instance, there's a lot of things that you can't do in real time unless you really build for it. So, you know, anti-aliasing, depth of field, some motion blur, a lot of those, you know, kind of processes that a Pro with an Ultra with tons and tons of RAM might be able to pull off, but a phone couldn't do. But you could easily have it, or relatively easily have, a level of detail that just keeps moving back and forth between those. So everyone's playing on the same platform against each other. It just keeps scaling up what it can do based on what your hardware can do. And that's something that, you know, PCs do that to some degree, but they're still, you know, it's hard because you're building across many, many PCs and many, many configurations, where Apple has a lot more control over that pipeline.
That's an interesting point.
But the question is, though, is it most bang for the investment from Apple to get AAA style games on the phone, AAA style games on the Mac? They made $50 billion off of gaming on the iPhone last year, off of 80 something billion dollars total sales, total revenue from the App Store. And these weren't like AAA type games.
No, they're casual games. But that's interesting. Exactly. That's a very good stat. That explains Apple's sudden interest in this market. Oh, wait a minute. You're saying $5 out of $8 we make on the App Store comes from games? Oh.
Yeah. But the point is that you don't need like neural engines in order to make that work. Really is like people who are, again, Candy Crush type games, Barbie games, things that are just keep putting money into the machine as you go on for more rewards and more levels and more content. It might be more along the lines of, there's such a thing as a gaming phone in Android. Maybe what they want to do is they see that as another lever to get more people to switch from Android to iPhone. If they can get a level of mobile gaming on the iPhone that they couldn't get on this other device, the Nintendo Switch is a small market compared to what Apple is making just from the App Store on gaming on the iPhone. But if they could simply get a lot of the people who would be interested in spending $200-$300 for a Switch or for one of these $600-$700 Windows-based or Linux-based gaming tablets to suddenly say, you know what, if your next phone were to be an iPhone, you could actually play a whole litany of AAA level titles without having to stream it from the cloud, without having to have this whole separate piece of hardware. It would just be on the regular phone you're using to access Twitch with.
All right, we got to move on because we only have 45 minutes. So enough of that on gaming. Here's a story from Philadelphia. Urban Outfitters is selling vintage retro iPods.
Vintage.
You know what? When I was at my mom's, I found three iPod classics. Unfortunately, they have the 30-pin connector. I bought some cables because my plan was going to fill them up and rotate them. So I would put my music on one, and she'd send it back. And then you have a few there right there, Jason. Holy cow, that's the original iPod in front of it right there.
Anybody want some iPods?
$350 for the fourth generation iPod at the Urban Outfitters. They're billing them as vintage and retro. Do you think there's a market? That's wild.
eBay is a market for them. Yeah. Did somebody find a box somewhere and be like, oh.
They must have found a bunch of them.
I think for me, the one that I really, mine got stolen from a gym years and years ago, over 20 years ago.
I'm mad I didn't bring my mom's home.
The mechanical scroll wheel.
Well, that's really old. They got rid of that quick.
That was magical. I know, but it was so...
That's the first gen. This one.
Yeah. Gen 1. It was so amazing. It felt so amazing.
It was a nice UI.
Never been the same. I know it's cheaper and it's easier and everything else, but it's never been as good as that very first one.
Yeah. Hey, sad news. Pad and Quill, which I thought made excellent leather and other iPad and phone accessories, is shutting down. They're going out of business. And I only mention that because you might want to go to padandquill.com. I have their leather watch band, the Lowry. I love. They had a bunch of nice cases. The site is very slow, so they're being hit hard because they're having a 50% off sale. But sad to see that, because I really like Pad and Quill stuff.
Yeah, good accessories.
Yeah. Aww. Let's talk more about Apple TV, because guess what? There's a rumor. This is a terrible story. This is a nightmare story that Apple is going to modify the Apple TV and eliminate standalone apps. Have you seen this? Where was this? Where did I read this?
I have to admit, I try to look at how many standalone apps I actually use. I mean, I definitely use all the video apps.
From Bloomberg. Really, Apple to revamp TV app and step towards simplifying video services. Dedicated apps, this is Mark Gurman, for buying movies and shows will be phased out. This is, I guess, what you put this.
It's Apple's dedicated apps, though, right?
Oh, is it? So this is the TV app. Company's bringing a new version of the app for release around December.
The shows app and the trailers app already sends you back to Apple TV.
So this will be part of the upcoming TVOS software update.
Right. So they're pulling their iTunes and movie rentals and all of those apps out because you could get to them from the TV app.
Oh.
And so you don't need standalone. Although I will say, since it's been a long time since the future of TV was apps, I do think that there is something coming where they take the TV app and the home screen and kind of stick them together in a way that they aren't stuck together right now. Because it is this weird dichotomy. You can set the TV button on your remote to be one or the other. Do you want apps or do you want the TV app? So it's like, which one is Apple's primary interface?
It's a little confusing.
And the answer is yes. Why can it not be both? And
they say the
weird stuff.
Gurman says
this is just their app.
You'll be able to buy third-party video services like Stars and Paramount Plus inside the TV Plus app as well as TV Plus. So yeah, maybe that's what they'd like to do. I mean, certainly we're already seeing that Amazon lets you subscribe to HBO, YouTube TV. So maybe that's
just
the future.
Some partners won't go with that, right? Like Netflix is not.
They're not
interested
in.
In that kind of deal. They want the Netflix app to be separate and they don't even share the data. Exactly. But in the long run, I mean, I think the ideal experience is that all that stuff should be in there and that the idea of apps should really only be for things that are not standard streaming content. But that's not how it has been set up to now.
And I wonder whether if you're included in that group, if you have to use the Apple login so that we can stop having logins for all of our for all of our stuff. Like if you want to use the separate app, it's fine, but you're now outside of the walled garden. There could be they could use that to apply pressure because it's such a pain.
Well, Apple wants that, right?
Yeah.
They want everything to go through channels. It's just that some of the companies are like, no, we don't.
Well, and the user wants to go through just one login. So Apple wants the one login. The user wants one login. It's the companies that don't want the one login. And the question is how much pressure can Apple apply to give it back to us?
I would take a proper keychain
Right. Like I just did this every now and then. My Apple, I have three Apple TVs in my house.
So
and every now and then one of them just logs out. So I was trying to watch the baseball playoffs yesterday on Max. And I'm like, oh, I'll just open up Max, which is logged in on all my other Apple TVs. And of course, on that one, it's like, sorry, you have to enter your provider. And I'm like, I just
plugged. So
annoying. And also, there are multiple Apple TVs and other devices, all of which are logged into your service. Yep. Why am I going through this again?
So, well, I think that's Max, right? I don't think that's Apple. Apple probably hates that.
But I think, like, on my Mac, I can have it in my keychain and re-enter the password.
Yeah, let's have.
But Max doesn't want to do that. It's, I don't know.
Let's have Apple TV support keychain and passwords. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
But all these, Apple and all the streamers want the same thing. They want you to, they want your loyalty and they want your experience to be thought of. Hey, I'm using my Apple TV. They don't want you to think that the Apple TV is just a generic device through which you go to your Netflix app, which is where you actually wanted to go in the first place. Whereas Netflix wants you to think that, hey, no, your home is Netflix and the Apple TV is an insignificant cog in the process that gets you here. So those are, you're not going to see truce between those organizations anytime soon.
Speaking of Apple TV, a little controversy. John Stewart is ending his show. The problem with John Stewart, he says he told his staff, according to the New York Times, because Apple had some problems with the content about China and AI.
Yeah, well, that's not
welcome to the media industry.
Andy had a great thread on Mastodon about this that I agree with 100%. It's the idea that, first off, this is a big corporation that's multinational, and multinational media corporations are going to make decisions like this, and that is not to excuse it. It's just to say, yeah, that happens at Apple, and it happens at Disney, and it happens at, you know, you name the corporation, they make decisions like this. I am kind of baffled about the fact that the impression is being given, and let me say that, it's the impression by the report is being given that Apple told John Stewart what he couldn't talk about, which I kind of have a hard time. You would ever go into business with John Stewart doing something like that. I think partly the source is coming from people who probably are losing their jobs and are angry, and it's based on what he told the staff. But what Matt Bellany at Puck News reported is that this was a drama-free incident, that it sounds like, you know, the show has not been setting the world on fire, and Apple and John Stewart had a conversation about what his plans were for season 3, which they had approved. But again, a lot of media companies are rethinking things now that the strikes are over, or one of the strikes is over, and they're canceling things they previously renewed. And they had a conversation about what the show could be, and John Stewart decided he was just going to pull the plug on it. And again, drama.
That sounds more accurate. That makes a lot more sense.
Right? Like, because again, nothing succeeds like success. Nothing.
Good ratings. A great deodorant. Wouldn't have had this argument. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, if this was the show everybody was talking about, he could say anything he wants and nobody would say a word, right? But it was kind of a disappointment, and I think maybe even for him. And they got to the point where they're like, how do we move forward with this? And John Stewart said, you know what, for you to move forward, you need to do things that I don't want to do, so let's just walk away. Again, kind of drama free and that's why I think that report, I believe Matt Bellany's report a bit more than I believe some of these initial reports. That all said, any multinational corporation that has media is going to make decisions like this that affect everything we see. And you just got to be aware of it. It's not just Apple. It's literally all big media does stuff like this. And, you know, you should know. You should know that, like, if the Chinese markets matter, they're going to make decisions for Chinese markets. Yeah. And that's what they'll do.
Which is my argument for companies like that not to be in the media business. I wish YouTube weren't owned by Google. I wish Apple... You know, but that's the
right, but is, the media companies would still be
power.
Yeah.
You know, Warner Brothers Discovery would still be.
Same thing
would
happens.
Still be.
That's Comcast consolidation's still be. Bad. Yeah. Here is Tim Cook standing next to Martin Scorsese's eyebrows, and Chad Redfro of the Osage Nation. Screening of The Killers of Flower Moon opening in theaters Friday. This is him on X. I thought he wasn't going to post on Twitter anymore. Oh well,
he's not posting on Twitter. He's posting on X.
Oh, okay. Sure. Apple clearly, in fact, there was a New York Times.
That's Hollywood. That's Hollywood, Tim.
Hollywood Tim.
Do stuff like that.
My people
Cupertino
did that,
Tim
not
is,
me.
Is not doing that.
Yeah. New York Times says Apple's new film strategy debuts with Killers of the Flower Moon. First of all, 3.5-hour movie. Not going to go see that in a theater. Not.
I think Scorsese has really scored on like taking full advantage of the new platform. Like he just,
yeah.
I don't have to, you know, like he, rather than sitting there and talking about how I'm never going to make a thing for streaming and it's all about the theater and everything else, he is just like, between what he did for Netflix and then what he's doing with Apple, he's kind of like, this is my new medium. I'm not limited to, and what I think is interesting is he didn't make a series. He's not like, I'm not going to cut this up in any certain way. I'm just going to make a long film and you'll decide when you want to go to the bathroom. You
know, so I'm just like, happy to say that Leo beat Killers of the Flower Moon at the weekend box office globally. Actually, Leo is a movie for the Indian market. It's in Tamil, called Leo Bloody Sweet. But it had a $31 million weekend. Martin Scorsese's Killer of the Flower Moon. Actually, wait a minute. What is this headline? That's wrong, because it says $44 million for Killers of the Flower Moon. Taylor Swift, $41.5 million. Oh, I see. Cumulative worldwide after 4 days, Leo won with 48.5.
Yeah, and the box office starts as an estimate, and then it gets updated, but it's still an estimate, and it's like one of those things that keeps going. Look, the truth is, this is, Andy said earlier, I think, this is not one of those things where they're doing it just to be Oscar qualified, right? But what it is they wanted to make a movie with Martin Scorsese. They wanted to make a movie that might be a Best Picture candidate, and it sounds like it is going to be one. And Martin Scorsese wants a wide release of his movies. That's just bottom line. And anybody who was vying to release Killers of the Flower Moon was going to have to agree to a proper theatrical release. And does Apple care? It doesn't. Right. It doesn't. It's not as strident as Netflix is at like being like, no, we don't even want to be in movie theaters, where Rian Johnson got them to put Knives Out 2 in like, I don't know, 20 theaters for 5 days. This is a more serious release, but make no mistake, they're doing it because Marty wouldn't make the deal unless you did it, because Martin Scorsese wants to be in movie theaters. And I don't blame him for that at all. But Apple looks at the results and goes, whatever. I mean, really, because it's going to be on Apple TV.
It won't be on Apple TV for at least 45 days. That's the deal with Scorsese.
And presumably Paramount and the theaters for distributing it and all of that. But it'll be there when the Oscar nominations come out.
They'll make plenty of money on it, especially because it's 3.5 hours. Thanksgiving weekend, of course, Apple's going to release Napoleon. It'll be in theaters first. That's the
which also looks
Ridley Scott. Amazing.
Looks really good, Ridley Scott. Joaquin
and again,
Phoenix.
Like the big thing is that, and I don't know what these conversations are like, but I can just tell you the way Apple appears to be spending money. When I look at some of these shots, especially Napoleon, it's like Ridley. You know, for a director, there's this constant hell of working with producers who constantly tell you, no, we have to shave off, you know, $100,000 off of the film or $1 million off the film, and you can't shoot an extra day and you can't do another thing. I don't get the impression Apple is telling people that. You know, I think that they're within reason, they're letting these directors run somewhat like established, well-known, you know, organized directors. They're giving them the freedom that they need to make the film that they want to make. And that's pretty addicting for these directors, you know. And so, I think that's because that just doesn't happen in a lot of places. Everyone's telling you how much everything costs and everything is. And it just feels like as someone who's worked on a lot of movies or a fair number of movies, looking at these films, you just feel like no one cut any corners. Like the only other person you see that with is like Christopher Nolan, you know, is where we didn't cut any corners. We just did what we want to do.
This is a huge success because the second weekend box office beat Taylor Swift. They didn't have Leonardo DiCaprio to promote it because of the actors' strike.
Right.
There was a lot of concern, and I'm looking at the Times article that said they'd be happy with $30 million. They're doing much better.
By the way, Napoleon is interesting because Ridley Scott is doing a theatrical cut for that, but simultaneously he's doing an Apple TV cut that's 3 hours long.
That's what I want. Why?
And that's going to be the real movie. Yeah. And I don't know, because of whatever deal they have for that one, he decided to do a shorter cut. But the you know, then there's immediately the extended director's cut will appear on Apple TV Plus. It's smart, right? Like,
brilliant.
Again, there are why do other traditional studios not make these deals with these guys? I think the answer is that Apple is waiting prestige and visibility for themselves and their service more than a traditional, you know, like the other ones, they got all the prestige. They've had the prestige. They great, but they got to make money. And Apple and Amazon and Netflix, like prestige is part of it too. They overweight it. Apple certainly overweights it. And if you're Martin Scorsese, isn't that great to have the sort of the money spigot turned on because you're Marty freaking Scorsese? Whereas some industry exec is going to be like, Marty, make the movie shorter and you're kind of old, so we're not going to give you much money. And Apple's
here's
$1 billion. Have at it. Yeah.
It's also part of the ongoing detente between people who make real movies and the streaming channels. Remember, like 3 or 4 years ago, Spielberg was part of a coalition who was saying that we don't think that movies that go on streaming should be eligible for Oscar consideration, even if they are opening in a few theaters to be qualified, because these movies are being made for phones. They're not made for cinema. And so there's a little detente happening here where, I mean, Disney, like Marvel movies, play them on an iPad, play it on a phone, it works. There are some movies that are like Napoleon, where, oh my God, if you, this is almost worth like upgrading your TV for some of these shots that we're seeing and this sort of thing. So we're seeing a sort of that this is still a really, really good haven for real filmmakers trying to make the old, the traditional style movies with scope and vision and filling the entire screen. And I wonder if there aren't a couple of Vision Pro headsets somewhere in the edit suite, just to, not to guide their editing, but just to get people, just to get them on board of, and here's the experience people are going to be having of a virtual 60-foot like VistaVision screen in front of them to be able to, if you want to cut this together so that people have to actually turn their heads to see things in different places in the screen, by all means, go for it, because this is where we want to be in the next couple of years.
As recently as 2 years ago, Martin Scorsese wrote, streaming services are devaluing, sidelining, demeaning, and reducing cinema to its lowest common denominator by calling it content. He's changed his tune a little bit.
and remember that on Disney, like a whole bunch of content that's just been out for like a month, they just got disappeared because they figured that, well, financially, we would much rather take the tax write-off by removing this from our catalog completely than to allow this, to allow Willow to remain and let it basically be there so that it can develop word of mouth. That's disgusting.
Yeah. It's interesting that the Scorsese has so drastically changed his tune. So, and of course, he did that long Netflix De Niro thing. I think the money talks, frankly.
Money talks. I think also Apple's branding, because like Alex said earlier, Apple doesn't make 3,000 things and throw something new up every week. Like
because
Netflix,
he moved.
Apple has tried for quality and tried to be perceived that way, and they got the best picture for Coda, and like they're trying to be like, we don't do that many releases, but they're good, and we care, and we, you know, and that's a good thing to put in the sales presentation.
He moved off of Netflix to Apple. He only made one movie for Netflix. I'm sure that was the check that, you know, but
And I think that if you're a filmmaker, I mean, to be brutally honest, the Netflix compression is so bad that if I look at it like, I watched Gray Man on Netflix, and in the dark scenes, the compression artifacts were so bad that even my wife noticed it.
Right.
And so the thing is, if I was a filmmaker, I would not. I mean, so the two best compressions are Disney Plus and Apple. I mean, they're running like 35 megs a second for.
I also wonder.
Every Apple TV subscriber gets 4K HDR, right? And that would be part of my pitch to Martin Scorsese, right?
Add a solid compression rate.
Yeah, good bit rate, good compression. We're not shortchanging and giving a 1080 standard. It's like all of this, you just get it when you're in Apple TV Plus.
If I was any serious filmmaker, unless you're paying me just an insane amount of money, and I saw my film on Netflix, the way I've seen some of these films on Netflix compared, and I've looked at the same thing, I'll open up the same film that's on Netflix on Apple, on, you know, the Apple, you know, just Apple service or whatever, just so different. And it's because they're, you know, they're shaving off the cost so that it doesn't cost as much to distribute it to everybody, you know, and they're cutting those corners. And I think that it's just, so I think if you're a real filmmaker, I think you're looking at when you're looking at your online sources to do these models, I think it's going to be interesting. I also think that with the Vision, the interesting thing is going to be, I don't think they're going to do films necessarily with Vision, but I bet you there's going to be a lot of extras. So we saw some blimps, what we call blimps. These are when we take, if you take this camera, this is a Canon R5 with a It's got two lenses on it. And we saw some blimps like this so the blimp is a big box that sits around this lens. So we saw this lens sticking out of blimps. And the reason that you have lenses sticking out of blimps is because you're shooting behind the scenes. And so that people were like, oh, they're shooting movies for the thing. I don't think that's what they're doing. I think what's going to happen is this vision, they're using these to shoot experiences, you know, behind the scenes of their own content. So you might see, you know, like what was it like to be on the set when they were shooting it? That kind of all that behind the scenes stuff. I think you're going to see an explosion of that next year when the vision comes out. I think they're shooting all that content right now. And so it's going to be really, and that's the kind of stuff Apple can do, though, that you can't do in a lot of other places. I do think that it'll be really interesting with some of the contracts, WGA and so on and so forth, what happens next year. I think that almost everyone's going to move towards quality over quantity because it just makes more financial sense for them, you know, in that process.
All right, we're going to take a break. Get your picks of the week prepared coming up in about 20 minutes. The Snapdragon Summit keynote, where Qualcomm is expected to announce its processor to compete with Apple Silicon. Everybody, it's so interesting when Apple came out with this Silicon. It was so performant and so amazing, and its power per watt was so good that I think it put the entire rest of the industry back on its heels. They just weren't prepared. Here we are 2 or 3 years. How long ago? It's been 2 years, 3 years since the first product?
Three.
Yeah. They're finally starting to catch up. Intel, this probably will come out this year with something. And now they say the Snapdragon X, especially with its AI capabilities. So there's some real catch up happening. We'll watch that with interest in a few minutes. And I invite you to stay tuned if you want. Our show today brought to you by Mylio. Love this. What a discovery this was for me when I found Mylio. I've been looking for a good DAM package for a long time. DAM being an acronym for Digital Asset Management. If you take a lot of pictures, you know, I have in my Mylio library 203,000 photos. Managing them becomes more and more important. There's so many of them. Not to mention videos and documents. Mylio Photos does it all. It's the solution to digital management for photos, videos, yes, and documents. It has OCR built in. It can understand and read the text, not only in photos, but in PDFs. It can read Microsoft Office documents. And it's free. Did I mention that? Put it on your Mac right now. Because Mylio is great and getting better. They just did a round of updates, which had some nice new features. They refined their search and grouping tools. They have incredible cataloging and access for your important files. You know, a lot of times people say, well, I'll just put it on Google Photos and their AI is going to do this. This does better than Google Photos without leaving your device. That's really important. You don't have to give your precious information, your documents, your photos, and your videos to the cloud to get this. Mylio Photos automatically assigns AI smart tags to your files. They now have updated dynamic search and quick filters. It means you can instantly find a photo you want. And you don't have to do this manually. You know, it does it all automatically. And their new Spaces tool really changes the game for sharing. You can create a digital space, determine what's visible and what's not, which means you can collaborate with coworkers or family members. They can see what you want them to, but not what you don't want them to. They can add their photos. You can create custom categories and then put them in a quick collection that's easy to share. You can collaborate on editing, managing, sharing media in any given space. And the space is unique to whoever you're sharing with. You can keep it private with passwords or pins. This is what's really interesting is Mylio is slowly moving all of these things that we had to use the cloud and third-party services for down to our own machines. And our machines are now so capable they can do this. Preserve your privacy. Keep your stuff to yourself. Get all the security you want, but not lose a single feature. Now, I'm using Mylio Photos Plus because one of the other features you can put your Mylio catalog on everything you've got, iOS, Android, Windows, Mac. So every machine I have has my catalog. You can store the originals if you have lots of storage, an optimized version if you have less, or even just thumbnails. But when you open a thumbnail, it'll download the original. It's not downloading it from the cloud. It's downloading it from another system on your network. Mylio Photos Plus keeps all my devices connected in a single library without cloud storage. Now, I do back it up to my Synology NAS. It supports Synology, so I have a backup, which is great. But with offline storage, I don't have to rely on the cloud to keep devices files accessible through devices. And I can create new backup systems and know they're secure because encryption is built into MIL. So if you want to use the cloud as a backup or as shared storage, you can with full encryption. So no one can see it but you. Download MyLeo today for free. I can't tell you what a revelation this was. I can go on and on. You can automatically import your Instagram, your Facebook, your Flickr, your documents folder, your Apple photos, all automatically. So when I take a picture on any of my phones, it's automatically imported right into MyLeo. And then the cataloging happens behind the scenes automatically. It's just fantastic. Get it on your mobile or your computer. I would say put it on your Mac right now. Go to MyLeo.com/twit for free. Just take a look at it. MYLIO.com/twit. They've got great editing features. They're auto-enhanced, all of that stuff. And again, without the cloud, on your local computer. And then if you decide you want MyLeo Photos Plus, you can put it on every device. But try MyLeo Photos right now for free. MyLeo, MYLIO.com/twit. I even had it do, because I have so many photos in Google Photos, I did a Google Photos takeout. I got all those takeout files, which are zips and a pain to parse. MyLeo can read them, imported them, fixed the dates, fixed the times, deduped them. So I have every photo I've ever taken that I've ever put anywhere is now in my MyLeo Photos. That's why I have 23,000 unique, not duplicated, unique photos. It's awesome. If you haven't tried it, please, MyLeo, MYLIO.com/twit. And we thank him so much for the support of our shows. We're big fans. One of the ways Apple's paying for all these expensive movies is very expensive cables. But you did see the CAT scans of Apple's $130 Thunderbolt cables. I love this because it said, yeah, you know what? There's a good reason it costs so much more. These Thunderbolt 4 USB-C Pro cable connectors are reinforced, grounded metal shell, single-piece crimped cable strain relief. All of this from Lumafield, which makes industrial CAT scanners or CT scanners. Study this question on three dimensions, and they say, you know what? This is a pretty impressive cable. If you want to see the pictures, Ars Technica has them. It's impressive.
The one thing that I wish they would have done is look at a Thunderbolt cable, you know, that competes with Apple's cable, because the other ones are like USB cables, right?
Yeah,
Apple's is super well engineered, but like, okay, but I can go to Otherworld Computing and I can get a Thunderbolt cable that is appreciably cheaper.
So Lumafield scanned a $10 Amazon Basics cable. They also just scanned a $3.89 cable. And there's a lot less in there. I think here's one of the things that I really blew me away.
Yeah,
was one of the things Apple does for timing reasons. You see this up and down sine wave? That's so that the length of this line is the same as the length of another line, so they're timed equally.
They create the speed of light.
Yep. Trace length parity for high speed data transmission. Okay, I can tell you probably Amazon Basics cable does not do that. Yeah. I'm guessing.
You forget about all the electronics that are inside that little molded end of a cable. We're used to thinking, oh no, that's just where the wires go into the pins, into the connector. It's basically an Apple IIe in there.
I'm going to quickly do my pick of the week, and I'll give you guys your chance. This was in the news this morning. Automattic, our friend Matt Mullenweg, the creator of WordPress, just bought something called texts.com. And I immediately set it up because now I can trust them. It's not free, but you can merge. This is like Pigeon. You can merge all of your messaging apps into one platform. Twitter, Messenger, Signal, Telegram, WhatsApp. Yes. Messages from Apple, Instagram, LinkedIn, Slack, and Discord DMs all into one thing. I set it up. I haven't fully set it up yet, but I was very impressed. Works on Mac, Windows, and Linux. I think it's probably using web APIs for most of these. I know it is for Signal, but wow. What a cool app.
That's a really big deal. It's not like it's the first solution for collecting all of your messaging through one portal, through one interface. But the thing is, like, I've never heard of any of these other companies before, but when you have Automattic doing it, it's like, okay, I might actually give this a live fire exercise.
I wouldn't have tried it without it. There is a hint. It is, if you want to try it, It's an invite only unless you sign up. So there's a 30-day free, so you can sign up for free. And it's not cheap. I think I paid $150 for a year, or I will be, once the 30-day trial is over. I'll decide before 30 days is up, before the end of the year, before I sign up for the $150. But I'm impressed. They say it's encrypted. Their servers never see the content. And I think because it's automatic, because it's Matt Mullenweg, I believe that. So, yeah, anyway, I just thought I'd mention that it might be worth trying texts.com. And they also got a great URL. I don't know how they got that. TEXTS.com. Andy, your pick of the week.
Very quickly, for reasons that I can't even guess at, I suddenly got back into streaming internet radio a couple of weeks ago, and was disappointed to find that there aren't a whole lot of really great streaming radio apps, and Apple Music is no longer an app that does streaming internet music and internet radio. But fortunately, I found that Icon Factory has this really nice app called Tryout. Exactly. They are like anything Icon Factory does is the most Apple, most Mac-like, most iPod-like, iPhone-like, Apple TV-like way of doing things. Very clean, very pretty app. Ooh. More than anything else, it works with everything. It's if you start by listening to BBC Radio in CarPlay, it will go from the car to your phone. Listen to it on the phone as you're taking a walk. Then go back in the house. It'll go through your Apple TV. Go back into your Mac. It's all synced through iCloud, so it knows like where you are. It knows where all your bookmarks are. Very, very pretty interface. It's not. Not supported by ads. So it's all. It really is a very clean, very, very pretty, wonderful interface. It's not that expensive. It's very flexible. $20 to own it, to buy it outright. I think it's like $1 a month for a subscription, or $10 a month, $10 a year, to go it on an annual plan. And I realize that just the thing that I want to have in the background in my office when I'm just doing like email work, I just want to listen to the radio, meaning that I want to listen to nice people with lovely foreign accents, maybe talking about documentaries about people who collect cheese labels in Northern England, you know, or I want to hear like music that I haven't really heard of before. Yes. And so what would you think was the turning point for cheese label design?
Well, the offset print, Coyle, 1841.
I am buying
it. I have no idea what this is.
I am buying it right now. If for no other reason than I want to support Icon Factory because Twitter screwed them. They found something, another app, and I think this looks like a great idea. Plus, it does Apple Music and it does AirPlay, and I mean, this is great. This is everything you want.
It's been around for a couple of years. Like, they just did a big update a couple months ago, and they did another big update just dropped today. So
nice,
well worth it.
Alex Lindsay, your turn for the pick of the week.
Yeah, so I might need to take my lower third down just for a second here because I'm going to show something that's going to go over top of it. Yeah, so the one of the things that that oftentimes people want to do is they want to have a couple of graphics and they're trying to figure out how to composite these graphics over top of Zoom. And there's a new product out that just came out last week, SPX graphics for Zoom. And so basically this is a Zoom app that you can install, and there's a free version of it that you can download with a lot of the basic pieces to it. And what it allows you to do is do things like add your lower third here. Let's see if I can pop that in. There you go.
So, ooh, that looks nice. So
if you want to have that there, you can also add things like, oh, I want a QR code or something up in the top. I might want to have a headline that I pop up here. I'm adding all the things that are possible. I can even say, hey, we're going to be right back. You know, like, and so I have the munchies. And so, but you can, and make it go away. And you've got this little switch that's inside of Zoom that actually makes this work. I can quietly tell you that you're muted. You can change what those, you know, what it says in those things. You also have things like little animated things here that of messages. You can bring up images that are there. I don't think I loaded that correctly. Oh, there it is. Hold on. Let me see if I pop that up. So those are just some, you know, some images that I have from. So if I want to show those there. And finally, you know, you can have things like if you're running a meeting, you can do things like this. Take over the world. Then we'll have ice cream for everyone, and then we'll get rid of virtual backgrounds. So anyway, so the so these are the kind of things that you can kind of put into the graphics that are there. without having a switcher, without having a bunch of graphics that are built in. And so this all just kind of loads in. And again, there's a free version of it that has a lot of the basic things. And then, of course, there's a pro version. And we think that they'll become they're opening up a marketplace so people can get creative about, you know, what they actually want to put up there. But it's, and I'll turn some of these things off and you can turn them on and off. But the idea that you can kind of add, I think a lot of people want to add a little bit of those. And I can see people using, especially just the basic free version of, I just want a tag that looks a lot nicer than just my little name down at the bottom of Zoom. So just, you know, get rid of that. And so that when you're doing presentations or you know, events with it, it gives you kind of that ability to kind of tie all those things together. So it's pretty slick. I'm sure it took a lot of work to get that to work inside of that. And the graphics that are, you know, SPX is, it's a great graphic system in general, but this is specific to Zoom. And it's a really, really great product if you're looking for something that has a little bit more pizzazz than what you would have on your standard Zoom event.
Nice. SPX.graphics. Mr. Jason Snell, your pick of the week.
Sure. I checked mbwpicks.com, which is, of course, the Bible of past MBW picks.
Thank you to our mysterious benefactor.
Yes, hasn't been. I don't think it's been updated in a couple of months, but I mean, please, we love you, and we couldn't do it without you. Exactly. I'm just getting this under the wire. just getting, maybe it's a few weeks under the wire because of I Paul try Mason. To not pick the same thing every year.
Yeah,
and I picked this last September, so guess what? It's been more than a year, and the new version of Keyboard Maestro just came out. So I'm going to plug it again. Keyboard Maestro 11, $36. If you already got it, you get an update. I think it's a cheap price, or you get it for free or whatever, but like but if you buy it fresh, it's $36. It's cheap. It is the ultimate automation app for the Mac. If you're somebody who fancies yourself an automator, or you wish you could automate something, but you realize, oh, I tried AppleScript and it didn't work, or I tried shortcuts and I couldn't make it to work because there's something that doesn't support scripting. My short elevator pitch for Keyboard Maestro is it can automate literally anything. It will automate mouse clicks and typing and clicking on menus. It will literally look at the screen, find something on the screen that looks like the right thing, and then you can click on it. So anything that you think is not automatable on the Mac is absolutely automatable with Keyboard Maestro, even if you have to do, again, I do a lot that's resorting to brute force, but also there are lots of very simple automations that I have where I can control my music from very specific keys on my keyboard that Apple doesn't want me to assign to controlling my music. It's got shortcut support. It's got a new command line utility now, so you can use that. It's got a whole bunch of other features. It's using Apple's text recognition engine now. Peter Lewis has been designing and writing Mac software for longer than I have been writing about Mac software. That's a long time now. And he keeps this thing up to date. It's going to keep getting better and better. But like the power, I just can't emphasize enough. You might say to yourself, oh, well, this thing surely can't be automated. It can. It can. And if shortcuts and AppleScript can't do it, don't worry.
Keyboard
Maestro. Absolutely.
Maestro.
A Keyboard Maestro will do it. Absolutely. It's amazing.
That's Jason Snell, sixcolors.com. Sixcolors.com/Jason for his many shows.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Andy Iannocco, GBH, next.
I was just on Friday live at the Boston Public Library. Go to WGBH News channel on YouTube to watch that, or go to WGBHnews.org to stream it on audio anytime you want.
Nice. Thank you, Andrew. Alex Lindsay's officehours.global. We don't have time to give you the full plug, but you should check it out because there's great stuff going on. And maybe, Alex, you'll join us with the Office Hours crew Monday at 5 for the Apple event.
I'll see you there.
I think that'd be fun. I'll be there. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, it'll be
fun. We're going to segue right into the Snapdragon Summit keynote. So I'll say goodbye to everybody. I'll thank everybody for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, at least until next week. You can watch us at live.twit.tv. Chat with us live at irc.twit.tv or in the Club Twit Discord. If you're not a Club Twit member, please support what we do. $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all the shows. Access to the Discord too, twit.tv/Club Twit. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show available at the website, twit.tv/MBW. And the ad-supported ones are free, of course. You can also watch us on YouTube. Best thing to do would be subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That way you get it the minute it's available. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. But now it is my sad duty to say, get back to work, because break time is over.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio-video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month. Or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of Home Theater Geekitude.